ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नश्च प्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text 5. Kaha Tvam Mat Sharane Loke बलात् हंसि अबलात् बलि नरदेवः असि वेषेण नटवत् कर्मणा अद्विजः। कस्वं मत्शरणे लोके बलाद्धंस्य बलान् बलि नरदेवोऽसि वेषेण नटवत्कर्मणा द्विजः। कस्वं मत्शरणे लोके बलाद्धंस्य बलान् बलि नरदेवोऽसि वेषेण नटवत्कर्मणा द्विजः। कस्वं मत्शरणे लोके बलाद्धंस्य बलान् बलि नरदेवोऽसि वेषेण नटवत्कर्मणा द्विजः।
Balam Bali.
Translation and purport also by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Oh, who are you? You appear to be strong, and yet you dare kill within my protection those who are helpless. By your dress, you pose yourself to be a godly man, king. But by your deeds, you are opposing the principles of the twice-born Kshatriyas. Purport. The Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are called twice-born because for these higher classes of men, there is one birth by parental conjugation and there is another birth of cultural rejuvenation by spiritual initiation from the bona fide acharya or spiritual master. So a kshatriya is also twice born like a brahmana, and his duty is to give protection to the helpless. The kshatriya king is considered to be the representative of God to give protection to the helpless and chastise the miscreants. Whenever there are anomalies in this routine work by the administrators, there is an incarnation of the Lord to re-establish the principles of a godly kingdom. In the age of Kali, the poor helpless animals, especially the cows, which are meant to receive all sorts of protection from the administrative heads, are killed without restriction. Thus the administrative heads under whose noses such things happen are representatives of God in name only. Such powerful administrators are rulers of the poor citizens by dress or office, but factually they are worthless lower class men without the cultural assets of the twice born. No one can expect justice or equality of treatment from once-born, spiritually uncultured, lower-class men. Therefore, in the age of Kali, everyone is unhappy due to the maladministration of the state. The modern human society is not twice-born by spiritual culture. Therefore, the people's government by the people who are not twice born must be a government of Kali in which everyone is unhappy. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya చక్షురుమీలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతపదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపాదాం సహగణలలిత శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. నమ ఓం విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణప్రేష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంతస్వామిన్నితి నామినే. నమస్తే సారస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యదేశతారిణే వాంఛాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌరభక్తివృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. ఐ విష్ హిస్ హోలీనెస్ దేవామృత స్వామి మహారాజ్ వుడ్ హావ్ బీన్ సిట్టింగ్ హియర్ అండ్ ఐ ఆన్ ది అదర్ సైడ్. He has two other classes today, and it would have been an over endeavor, he told me yesterday, for him to give this class as well. As I was preparing to come to Melbourne, and I came to know that our schedules are overlapping, I was concerned that my program shouldn't overlap his, and also that I would get the benefit of his classes. Unfortunately, I have heard only one class yesterday, but somehow by the arrangement of providence it is that I have to speak here in his presence. Nevertheless, by his encouragement I shall attempt to speak a few words, and also by the encouragement of all of you present here. This chapter is entitled The Punishment and Reward of Kali. We are at the stage when King Parikshit has arrived at the scene, so to speak, where Mother Earth in the form of the cow and the personified principles of religion in the form of a bull have been lamenting about their state of affairs, especially on the earth. And when King Parikshit arrives, he sees a person who is dressed like a king, but who is not actually a king, beating the legs and bulls of a cow and the bull. And naturally he is incensed, because these animals are meant to be protected, because they are helpless. And the helpless citizens or living entities within a kingdom are meant to be protected. And that exactly is a function of a king. According to the Varnashrama system, the king is meant to be a kshatriya. Kshatrayate iti kshatriyaha. One who gives protection to those who need protection is called a kshatriya. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that especially for those who are helpless, it is imperative for the king or the kshatriya or the ruler to offer or give that protection. So everyone who is a citizen needs protection, because everyone is helpless under some or the other condition in life. The Sanskrit word for citizen or subject of the state is praja. The word praja focuses on the word ja, which means janma or taken birth. So elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada defines the word praja as one who has taken birth in the kingdom. In other words, a citizen of a kingdom or a land is not simply a human who is living in the country or the king or the kingdom, but any living entity who has taken birth there. This is the broader understanding of the word citizen. And that therefore includes all living entities, including the animals, the birds, and so on. It is a common misconception of the modern era when the principles of Varnashram Dharma are no longer being applied, that citizens implies only the human beings. And therefore the people feel they have a license or a complete freedom or even a right to kill animals without any restriction. And therefore there is mass slaughter of animals, and especially the cows and the bulls, in an organized way, in very sophisticated and sometimes, like in India, not at all sophisticated, very crude slaughterhouses. So the king is duty-bound to protect such helpless beings. The Vedic culture especially stresses that the cow should be protected, women should be protected, children should be protected, the elderly should be protected, and the brahmanas also should be protected. That doesn't mean other categories should not be protected, but these five have been especially mentioned because there is a tendency for them to be exploited, a tendency for them for injustice to take place against these five categories. And that is especially harmful to the society. So the Kshatriya was duty bound to do this. And the Kshatriya had to be very alert. And King Parikshit, as an expert and ideal Kshatriya and king, used to wander around the kingdom to see if the principles of Dharma were being upheld. And he would admonish and rebuke and punish anyone who was found to be violating these rules. And therefore we see here that he's apprehending this person who is dressed as a king but not acting as a king. A king is supposed to be noble. He's supposed to follow the principles of religion and protect the helpless. But here is a person who is actually harming the helpless. There is a word used here in this verse which is very significant, and that is Naradevaha. Nara means human, Deva means the Lord. So Naradeva, Prabhupada translates as man-god, which means that actually in the Vedic culture, the king is meant to be a representative of God, and therefore was worshipped in many cultures practically as good as God, because he was such a representative of God. Even though, according to the Varnashrama system, the Brahmanas are considered superior to the Kshatriyas, but the Brahmanas would offer due respect to the king. They never felt that because we are Brahmanas and we are superior, so we can mistreat the Kshatriyas. They would also offer respect because they understood that the Kshatriya was such an important person in the society. He was the one who was meant to protect everyone, and this power for protection of the citizens came from the Supreme Lord. The Kshatriya represented the Shakti or the power of the Lord to protect the helpless. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, the Kshatriya king is considered to be the representative of God to give protection to the helpless and chastise the miscreants. Whenever there are anomalies in this routine work by the administrators, there is an incarnation of the Lord to re-establish the principles of a godly kingdom. Unquote. Sometimes the question arises, why are most of the incarnations of the Lord in Kshatriya, why do they appear in Kshatriya families? Yes? Of course, in Vrindavan, Lord Krishna didn't play the role of a Kshatriya. He played the role of a Vaishya and herded the cows. But very often we find that the incarnations of the Lord appeared in Kshatriya families. Later on, after Vrindavan, Lord Krishna played the role of a Kshatriya in Mathura and Dwarka, Lord Ram appeared in a Kshatriya family. Prithu Maharaj was a Kshatriya. So there are many, many such instances. Relatively, there are fewer instances of the Lord appearing as a Brahmana. There are, but fewer. So why is it the Lord more often appears as a Kshatriya? And that answer is given here by Srila Prabhupada. And the answer is that because it is necessary to give protection to the citizens, especially those who are helpless and offenseless. And when the Naradeva or the Deva in Nara form is not available or is not doing the right job, then the Lord Himself has to come and establish that dharma and give protection. Because the Lord considers this such an important function in the society that when an appropriate or suitable person is not there to give protection to the citizens, then He has to appear Himself and play that role and protect the citizens. It is the Lord who gives the power to everyone to do anything and everything. And those who are especially empowered by the Lord are called Shaktyavesh avatars. Shakti means energy or strength. Avesh means to enter. So that living entity in whom a very special power of the Lord is infused is called a Shaktyavesh avatar. And Prithu Maharaj, for example, is considered a Shaktyavesh avatar also. Now, each of these Shaktyavesh avatars are endowed with a certain specific type of potency to accomplish a certain specific purpose. So, Narad Muni has, for example, the Bhakti Shakti, the knowledge, the strength, the potency of Bhakti. The four Kumaras have the Jnana Shakti, or the potency of knowledge. Parashuram had what is called Dushta Damana Shakti, the potency to subdue the Kshatriyas. When the Kshatriyas became, they started behaving badly, they strayed away from their dharma and their two duties and responsibilities. Then the Lord had to empower or appear as Parashuram to subdue these Kshatriyas, these false Kshatriyas who had become such a burden on the earth. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj had the Shakti that was called Prajapalana Shakti, the energy or the potency to maintain and protect the citizens. So the king therefore is called Naradeva. Even till a few decades ago, this used to happen in Nepal. Of course, now in the last decade or so, or little more, the king has been overthrown, and now the communists are in power and so on, and the influence of Kali increases more and more. But we see that the people in that small country used to actually worship the king almost on the level of Lord Vishnu. This used to be a tradition there in that country. He was Naradeva. Of course, then the king, as is a symptom of Kali Yuga, deviated. But the king was much loved by the citizens. And the closest that was possible in this stage of Kali Yuga to come to a monarchy, that was found. But then it was too good to last. Even with whatever semblance of Kshatriya protection there was, or behavior there was, even that disappeared very quickly. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that there are seven specific duties of a Kshatriya. Shauryam Tejo Dhritir Daksham Yuddhecha Api Apalayanam Danam Ishvara Bhavascha Kshatra Karma Svabhavajam. So a Kshatriya must be very heroic, Shaurya. He must be very resourceful, very determined. He must be very expert in doing things. He must lead from the front in a battle. Srila Prabhupada used to often remark that the leaders of today sit comfortably in their palaces and offices and let the poor soldiers go to the front to fight and die. But they wouldn't go like in the front to fight. But the Kshatriyas of the Vedic culture were not like that. They would actually be out there leading their soldiers in the fight. They would either emerge victorious or they would die. And often Prabhupada used to give instances of how a Kshatriya would not come back. He would either come back victorious or he wouldn't come back at all, or his dead body would come. And Prabhupada gave the instance of this one Rajput king who came back when he was not victorious, and his queen actually didn't open the door of the fort to allow him in. His own wife, because she was saying, no, it's a disgrace. You either come back victorious or your dead body comes. And for a wife to say that about a husband is not an ordinary thing. It wasn't that she was about to divorce him or something. But still, she had to uphold some principles. She wanted to protect her husband's dharma. It wasn't an ordinary thing to be a Kshatriya. Many times, you know, when we're talking about Srimad Bhagavatam, some people object in the modern times. You know, the Kshatriyas had so much facility for enjoyment, and Arjuna and Krishna, they were just wandering, enjoying, there were so many pleasure houses available for them, there was so much license given to them for enjoyment, and they would enjoy at the expense of the citizens, they would get taxes from the citizens and then use the money for so much of sense gratification. Well, perhaps, but then when the need came, they were out there to protect the citizens. It's not that they only enjoyed. Part of that nature of the mode of passion is that some degree of enjoyment is part of the game. That's how a Kshatriya is made. But then, if the Kshatriya only wants to enjoy sense gratification at the expense of the citizens, but doesn't want to go out into the field and actually personally be there to protect the citizens, like Maharaj Parikshit, then he's not meant to be a Kshatriya. There are some communities in India which are Brahmana communities, Kshatriya communities, at least by birth, you see. So sometimes they hang on to these designations and they claim themselves to be of that Varna because they have been born in that Varna. So sometimes we have these people who come and say, well, my community is of Kshatriyas, therefore I should drink and I should eat meat. It's there in such a reference in this scripture, that scripture. They try to justify their own meat eating or their own alcohol consumption because they are Kshatriyas. I said, what business do you do? Well, I trade in this and that. That's not the business of a Kshatriya. If you really want to do the things that a Kshatriya is allowed to do, then you should be out there fighting in the field to protect the citizens. Are you really doing that? So people, the logic of the half hen, yes, they take what is convenient to them, but the difficult part they don't do. So the Kshatriya's job is not at all an easy job. It's a very difficult job. A Kshatriya has to be willing to give up his life for the protection of the citizens. And it's extremely frustrating. For a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. When the Pandavas were in exile, and many, many sages and Brahmanas came along with them, and they lived a life of great hardship in the forest. Of course, they had been accustomed to all sorts of royal comforts, and then to have to come to live in a forest is extremely difficult. And they lived on roots and berries, and they slept under the trees. There were no soft, luxurious beds to sleep on. It was cold, it would rain, it was hot. Still they managed. And the physical discomforts were just one small part of the discomfort they experienced. For the Pandavas, the dishonor, the insult of having to be relieved forcefully of their kingdom, their prestige, and being sent away into this into the forest, and to have to tolerate the intense ignominy or the insult of seeing Draupadi attempted to be disrobed in the assembly was really too much for the Kshatriyas to tolerate. Even for an ordinary person who is not a Kshatriya, these things are difficult. And for a Kshatriya, it's very, very difficult to tolerate. And here was King Yudhishthir. He would be absorbed in hearing the Puranic lore and the lectures from the Brahmanas. And Bhima would be there gnashing his teeth, saying, you know, what kind of Kshatriya are you? We should be there and fighting in for our rights, and we should kill the Kauravas right now. And Arjuna would be there clenching his teeth and his fist and practicing his bows and arrows, his shooting, to keep himself in good shape for the battle that was to come. And Draupadi would also berate her husband, King Yudhishthir, that, you know, it is I who suffered the ignominy of being disrobed, and you are just peacefully sitting here and hearing, you know, discourses on the Puranas, and it's all your fault. So Draupadi would, sounds familiar? Yeah, it's all your fault. You know, you are responsible. You did the game of dice and you did this. And they were all extremely upset. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj would pacify them and said, no, whatever it is, we must follow the path of Dharma. For nothing in the world should we give up the path of Dharma. That's very, very important for us. Somehow, because they were so respectful to him and because of his qualities, their anger would subside and again it would erupt another day. And this went on. And then Draupadi made a statement at that time. She says, there is no greater suffering in life than to be a Kshatriya. So for all those who envy the enjoyment that the Kshatriyas have, the facilities for enjoyment, they can also hear the other side of the story. That they also had to undergo this kind of dishonor. They had to undergo distress of this sort, which was intolerable. The Brahmanas were peacefully sitting in their little homes and doing the Vedic sacrifices and chanting and studying the Vedas and all that. And the Kshatriyas had to be out there facing all these difficulties. So being a Kshatriya is not an easy thing. And the Kshatriya was expected to be at the beck and call of the citizens. Anytime, anywhere, if any citizen required protection, the Kshatriya had to be there on the spot to save him. In the Ramayana, we hear the story of how there used to be a bell that was outside the palace of Lord Ramachandra. And any citizen who wanted redressal of his grievances had the rights to come into the palace. He would come and ring the bell. And the moment that bell was heard, Lord Ram would say, who's there? Call him in. There was no other protocol. There was no other appointments to be made that we'll meet him at such and such time. No, anyone could walk in. And the king would be duty bound to actually listen to the grievances of that citizen. And one time it is said, a dog came in. A dog was ringing the bell. And then Lord Ram ordered him in. He said, yes, Lakshman, please call him, escort him in with due honor. He is also my citizen. He needs my protection. And he is aggrieved. So the dog is ringing the bell. So bring him in. So the dog came in and he vented his grievances. There's this Brahmana who is, you know, beating me. And so the king was obliged to call the Brahmana. What happened? Why did you beat this dog? You're a Brahmana. You're not supposed to be doing this. Your actions are incompatible with your status as a Brahmana. And so he asked the dog, what do you want? I shall give him the punishment. What punishment would you like me to give him? Then the dog explains his own previous life. But before that he says, actually, I want him to be the head of such and such monastery. He says, really? What kind of punishment is that? You're giving him such a high position as being the head of the monastery. So he said, all right. So anyway, that done, but now you tell me the reason. So he said, you know, in my previous life, I was the head of that monastery. And because I misused my position, because that's how it is to be in that, and therefore I've got this body. So the best punishment I can give this person is that he should be there. So when position is misused, what happens? It's here for us to see. Whether one is a Brahmana, one is a Kshatriya, whatever one may be, one has duties, one has responsibilities. Today people are worried more about their rights. Everyone is fighting for their rights. But how many people fight about our duties? What are our duties and what are our responsibilities? That comes first and our rights come second. If everybody would think about their duties and responsibilities more than they would think about their rights, the world would be a happier place where everyone would get their rights automatically, because everyone would be concerned about their own responsibilities and duties. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also there is a mention of how once a Brahmana came to the court of King Ugrasena in Dwarka and began to berate the king like anything. And he said, what kind of a king are you? I am a Brahmana. I am pious. I am sinless. I haven't done anything wrong in this life. But still, my wife gave birth to a child and he died immediately. It means that you are responsible. Now today, imagine any other leader being accosted like that. My child died and you are responsible because you're not governing the country properly. Who would accept such a thing? But Ugrasen took it. He was very humble, he accepted. He said, yes, whenever any unusual things happen, there are aberrations in the natural order, then the king is responsible because there's some discrepancy in his administration, some mistake that he's performing. Something that is not according to dharma is happening. So King Ugrasena didn't protest. He heard it out. At that time, Arjuna happened to be visiting his dear friend Krishna. So Arjuna said, don't worry, my dear Brahmana. I will see that nothing will happen. The next time around, I will be there to protect you. Don't worry. But it happened again and yet again. And the Brahmana was very, very annoyed. And he rebuked Arjuna, he rebuked the whole class of Kshatriyas and said, fie upon the Kshatriyas of this day and age. There are no real Kshatriyas in this Kali Yuga. I have been deceived. And those who are meant to protect are no longer able to protect. In this way, Arjuna had to hear this. And he said, this time I will personally stand at your doorstep. And he made a whole fence or a protective armor of arrows. And the time came when his wife was pregnant again and she was about to deliver. And he was standing there, Arjuna, with his bows and arrows on guard to see who would take away this child. Yamaraj shouldn't come in. But then it happened that still the baby died. And this time it was beyond the control of the Brahmana. He again began to rebuke Arjuna. And this time Arjuna, he had made a vow that I'll enter into the fire if I'm not able to rescue your child. And he wasn't able to rescue. But then as usual, it was Krishna who came to his rescue. Okay, you know, let's go on a little trip. So they went to Yamaraj. Yamaraj said, was very happy to see them. He said, I'm not responsible. It's not my doing. And eventually they had to go all the way to Mahavishnu. And it was Mahavishnu who wanted to have darshan of Krishna. So he had orchestrated this whole thing. Anyway, he happily returned those children of the Brahmana. Anyway, the point to make in this context is how alert, attentive, and conscientious and humble even a Kshatriya had to be to protect his citizens from any sort of calamity or difficulty. It was not an ordinary thing. Today we see that in Kali Yuga, all positions or forms of authority have become undermined. With the erosion of authority, which is one of the symptoms of this age of Kali, there is lack of discipline. All the ills come with erosion of authority. And Kali therefore enters into the authorities and makes them misbehave. It all started, the very symptom, the first thing that happened in Kali Yuga was the son of sage Shamika, whose name was Sringi, he cursed Maharaj Parikshit. He shouldn't have done it. It was a misuse of his brahminical power, an abuse of his power. And because of this fall down of the brahmanas from that time, actually Kali entered in. So Kali entered into this earth, into this world, through the brahmanas, who were the topmost authorities for humanity. And then through the brahmanas, gradually, as the brahmanas became more degraded, then so also did the kshatriyas, and then the vaishyas, and the shudras, and the decline seeps downward, percolates down to all sections of the society. So much so that no authority is respected now. People speak carelessly, frivolously about anyone in any position of authority. Anyone feels it right or just to criticize anybody for anything. So whether it is the leaders, the political leaders, or the kings of the country, whether it is the teachers and professors in the schools and colleges, whether it's the parents at home, whether it's the elders, and so on. It has become the norm practically that those who are meant to set a good example as authorities do not do that generally, very often. And therefore those who are meant to respect them and be protected and guided by them give up that respect and the protection and be independent. So one of the symbols of Kali Yuga is that everyone wants to be independent. No one wants to follow any authority. Following any authority is anathema. It is something you don't want. And the very word authority has become detestable to the people of this age. Everyone is seeking freedom without the responsibility that goes with the freedom. If one is not responsible enough or mature enough to handle the freedom, one is sure to misuse it, and that can cause a calamity. So as Srila Prabhupada used to explain, quoting Prahlad Maharaj, we have the situation of the blind leading the blind, and therefore everyone moves to a hellish condition of life. An unfortunate situation. Where does it all begin? It has to begin with restoring the authority and the purity of the brahminical class. That's why Srila Prabhupada said, I have come to create a class of brahmanas. Not that he didn't want kshatriyas, not that he didn't want good vaishyas and so on, but he understood that you have to begin at the top, because the decay started at the top. And if you set the top right, then everything else will happen. When there are good brahmanas in the society, setting the good example, teaching the right kind of knowledge to the people of this world, then there will be others who have the tendency to be kshatriyas, who will be inspired by the example. Then they will come forward. They will start doing the duty under the guidance of the kshatriyas. And when the kshatriyas become ideal and strong, the vaishyas start becoming ideal because they are now comfortable under the protection of these kshatriyas. They can do business properly. So they will go according to the laws of dharma. And then when the brahmanas, kshatriyas and vaishyas, they perform their duties properly, they protect the shudras too. The shudras are also very happy in that situation. So the whole society becomes happy. So it is necessary for the creation of the Brahminical class and the re-establishment of the Brahminical culture. The Kshatriyas respect only two classes of people. One is a Brahmana, who is a genuine Brahmana, and second is a more powerful Kshatriya. They will not respect others. They will not obey others, rather. Although they will respect everyone. Having an authority doesn't mean that one becomes authoritarian. We see in the Ramayana that when when Dasharatha Maharaj wanted to coronate Lord Ram as the crown prince, he first of all called his Brahmana advisors and asked them, "This is my thought. What is your suggestion? Do you think it's a good decision for me to do this?" And they said, "Yes, yes, it's a very good decision. We heartily applaud your idea. Ram is the perfect person to be the next king. So he should immediately be anointed as the crown prince, the Yuvaraj." He called his ministers, asked them as well. And not only that, he called all the leading citizens of the kingdom, including the Vaishyas. And all the prominent citizens came in. He had an assembly. And he said, "Look, this is what my plan is. I'm getting old. I'm 60,000 years old. And now the time has come for me. I have to do succession planning. I have to plan for the next generation. And I don't see anyone who is more capable and fit to become the next king than Ram, who is my eldest son." And they again applauded him heartily and said, "Yes, my dear king, your decision is perfect and we all support you." So in this way, even though he had the right to take a decision and no one would have opposed him, but still he took them into confidence. He consulted with them. He brought them and said, "Yes, this is my decision. What do you think?" Because it was such an important thing. And then, of course, the coronation of Ram was announced. Unfortunately, there was one person who didn't quite like the idea, and then you know the story after that. So in this world, if we want to re-establish the principle of protection of the helpless, in order that people may proceed nicely on the path towards spiritual perfection, then progressively the creation of the Brahminical class and then the Kshatriya class and so on must take place. In this day and age, of course, Prabhupada also explains, it's well near impossible to do a cut and paste job of the Varnashrama system from the Vedic culture. In this Kali Yuga, it's practically impossible. But nevertheless, to whatever degree it is possible, Prabhupada did want this to happen. He did want the government to happen in a certain way. In the first canto elsewhere, he gives a whole prescription of how the government should run. And for example, how Ekadashi should be declared holidays. People should chant and perform spiritual practices on that day. You know how the word holiday comes up, right? A holy day. A holiday is actually a holy day. So you get one day off from work to perform holy activities. But that's about the last thing people do on a holiday. They don't do that, not even the last thing, because even if it's the last thing, it means that they do it, but they don't do it. So a holiday means a place for sense, is time for sense enjoyment. You drive out onto the beach or into the countryside and enjoy yourself. So the original word has been perverted. So the holiday is meant to be a holy day when you focus your energies entirely on some spiritual or religious activities. That was the intention of the word holiday. So Prabhupada said every Ekadashi must be a holiday, a holy holiday. and the government should declare this like this, and all the citizens should follow Ekadashi, and they should chant the holy names on that day, hear the Katha of the Lord, and so on. If today's leaders knew that simply by being leaders, they take 1/6 of the karma of the citizens, if they really, really knew that, nobody would be leaders. And there's a lot of heavy karma going around. To have that on your head, 1/6 of that, of all the citizens, is such a heavy burden. So the kshatriya has to be really very, very spiritually strong, not just materially strong. But he has to be very spiritually strong in order to digest that karma. The reason why today in India we find many, many people from the so-called Brahminical caste or the community performing so many abominable activities is that their intelligence gets spoilt because they don't do the work of a Brahmana, like performing austerities, performing devotional service, studying the scriptures, and all that a Brahmana is supposed to do. They only want the dakshina from people. So when they take the dakshina from the people, they're taking the karma. So they take the karma of that person along with the money, but they don't have the spiritual potency to digest that. So they get a lot of indigestion. So that destroys their good intelligence. And they perform abominable activities which even other people perhaps don't perform. Similarly, the kshatriyas, they, by virtue of being in the position of a king or a leader, have to bear 1/6 of the karma of the praja, of the citizens. And if they're not strong enough spiritually, if they're not guided properly by brahmanas, by proper brahmanas, they will also have severe indigestion. Chanakya Pandit in his Arthashastra, his famous magnum opus on politics and economy and so on, he gives the timetable of a kshatriya. It's quite astonishing. A kshatriya is meant to be really, really austere. A kshatriya hardly gets time to sleep. Maybe a few hours, just a few hours. And he has to spend, I was calculating the time, I read it years ago, I don't remember the details, and was calculating the number of hours he says a kshatriya should perform religious or spiritual activities. It comes to almost 5 or 6 hours a day. 1/4 of the day of a kshatriya is meant to go into spiritual and religious activity, like hearing discourses, studying the scriptures, and so on and so forth. Hearing from the brahmanas, discussing philosophical topics, because he has to have his head in place. He has to have that Krishna consciousness in order to be able to rule the kingdom. It's a very heady thing to be the lord and master of a huge kingdom, so much opulence. One could easily go off track. So one needs to be very Krishna conscious. One needs to have very powerful brahmanas guiding him, and the kshatriya has to submit himself to them. And then, of course, in the rest of the time, he had so many other affairs of the state to deal with. So King Parikshit is giving us an example of what it means to be a real, proper kshatriya. And the Vedic life is characterized by spiritual culture. The modern leaders do not have the spiritual culture. Therefore, the citizens do not have the spiritual culture. And therefore, a hellish situation is created. So Srila Prabhupada's goal was, all right, never mind how difficult it is to institute the Varnashrama system, just spread the spiritual culture. Just spread the Krishna conscious culture. Whatever one may be or not be, let everyone become Krishna conscious. And with that perfect prescription, there is real hope for the world. So Srila Prabhupada is actually the real hope for the world. He has given that light at the end of the tunnel. It's a long tunnel, a dark one, But at the end, there is bright light. Yes, there are these wonderful books that Srila Prabhupada has given us, like the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada has given us the deities, the holy name, the association of devotees, and many, many wonderful things. So we can take advantage of that to imbibe this Krishna conscious culture in our hearts, and to be able to also spread this Krishna conscious culture, this culture of devotion to Krishna, all over the world. Then everything auspicious will happen. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, would you like to make any comments? Perhaps point out any mistakes in the class? Any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, we have seen how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada took a very practical approach to bring about spiritual revolution and to fight against some of the traditions that were not relevant today, or that came in the way of devotional service. And we can practically see the benefits also. One such situation is Mataji's getting, you know, Brahmin initiation, which was probably not heard of before, Mataji chanting Gayatri Mantra. So though we practically see that it is helping our society very much, that the approach that Srila Prabhupada took, sometimes when we go for preaching, we get asked the question saying that if everything is scriptural about what you are speaking, then how do you explain these kind of deviations that have, so how do we address that issue, that question?
The question is of how or why it is that if we are following scriptural codes, that acharyas like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Srila Prabhupada made some changes, like for example giving brahminical initiation to ladies which was not done before, and so on. The answer is that there are two things. One is called principle and the other is called the detail. The acharyas will never change the principles, but they will, according to time, place and circumstance, adjust the details in order to facilitate attainment of the principles. The principle is one should become Krishna conscious. The principle is one should spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And within a certain framework, there is some kind of freedom to adjust the details. Of course, it's not an unlimited freedom to adjust, but the acharyas in their wisdom, with their purity and understanding, are able to do this. They are empowered by the Lord to do this kind of adjustment for the sake of fulfilling the purpose of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, that's a big question. So, but this is the answer in brief. So it's not the major thing. It's not such an important thing. The important thing is that in this day and age, the ladies are also getting the opportunity to do this. You're getting a chance to be also very Krishna conscious. So the acharyas see the circumstances and they act accordingly. Any other question? Yes. Yes.
While you're speaking, I was just reminded of the pastime in Krishna book where Krishna and the Galilee boys were begging food from the Brahmins, and the Brahmins were refusing them food, but it was their wives who were willing to give to Krishna. Is it correct to make that relation to that, or is that my misinterpretation?
The question of the pastimes of the wives of the sacrificial brahmanas who lived in the border of Mathura and Vrindavan. The brahmanas were more absorbed actually in the technicalities of performing the sacrifices and the mantras and so on, they were actually followers of the Karmakanda process. They weren't actually devotees, pure devotees of Krishna. But it so happened, it was their good fortune, that their wives, their respective wives, were pure devotees of Krishna. And how did they become pure devotees? Because they simply heard. They hadn't even seen Krishna up until this point. It was the first time they saw Krishna, face to face. But they had heard about him. The flower sellers and so many others would come from Vrindavan to their place and they would talk about Krishna. And just by keeping on hearing about Krishna, they developed pure devotion for him. So they were pure devotees. The Brahmanas were not devotees. Eventually they realized their folly and they admonished themselves. So this goes to show that the path of pure devotion is not dependent on material circumstance like gender, caste, creed, community, nationality, language and so on. That's the point to learn. Any other question or comment? Yes.
Maharaj, you were mentioning about authority and how as leaders people should not be authoritarian, but we are seeing that also in Kali Yuga, you mentioned that people don't want to accept any authority and there is so much tendency to reject authority and be free and independent. So with that culture increasing where, you know, there is no authority being accepted or there is no adherence to depending on others' instructions, then how as leaders one can you throw some light on how as leaders one can be exemplary, whether they are in their roles as parents or leaders in the society or any other sphere of influence that they may have despite this culture being so much present of rejecting authority?
Well, all we can do is to try to set a good example ourselves. And if we do that, then I think that will go a long way. In our circle of influence, we can make a good influence. If we set good example, then everyone starts setting a good example personally in doing whatever it is that they are doing. That will be the beginning. And then the preaching movement is that we get hold of the leaders of the society, give them Krishna consciousness, so that they will also now start setting good examples. They take to Krishna consciousness. And this is how a gradual transformation takes place. We have to begin somewhere. And like charity, setting a good example should also begin at home. Okay, yes.
Maharaj, you stated that the Vedas in Vedic culture, you know, they had a license to have a certain amount of enjoyment at the expense of the citizens, but they had to, when the need arose, they had to fight to protect the citizens. So what sort of enjoyment were the Kshatriyas allowed to have?
What sort of enjoyment were the Kshatriyas allowed to have? Like, for example, the wealth was considered to be the wealth of the king. All the wealth. And any wealth that was unclaimed was also automatically the wealth of the king. It was his personal property because he was Naradeva. He was a representative of the Lord. Ultimately, it's the wealth of the Lord, but because here is a Lord who has manifested as a king, who has empowered this personality to represent him, therefore it was considered his property. And he had so much wealth at his disposal. He had these palaces and he had these servants and the finest delicacies to eat, foodstuffs, clothing and queens and chariots, and you know, they lived a good life. So the best food, the best living circumstances, the best clothes, so much of respect from everyone. His every word would be followed by the citizens. His word was a rule of law. So much power, so much opulence, so much facility for enjoyment. But along with it, went a very, very great responsibility. And they did it. And when they didn't do that, there was trouble. And in some cases, like in the case of King Vena, the Brahmanas actually killed him. Although that was a very unusual thing for Brahmanas to do. Brahmanas generally don't get involved in killing. But in this one case, they had to do that. Because he had gone over the top. He had declared himself to be the Lord. All sacrifices should stop and it should be done in my name only. Yes? Yes.
Maharaj, who was the king whose wife didn't let him come in the palace? The Kshatriya king?
I don't know the name. Prabhupada didn't mention the name. He just mentions there was a Rajput queen who did that. Actually, a Kshatriya is not supposed to have wounds on his back. Why? Yeah, it means you were running away. You were running away and therefore you had the wounds in the back. And actually, a Kshatriya is not even supposed to shoot someone or harm someone who's running away. So actually, he shouldn't even be having the wounds in the back. Because if the other person is a good Kshatriya, he wouldn't harm a person who was running away. A Kshatriya wouldn't harm someone who had taken his shelter or someone who was running away out of fear. So such high standards of behavior, unthinkable practically in this day and age where people just drop bombs and run away, or they just pack it in some secret place and they disappear, or some other people die, 100 people die. That's not Kshatriya behavior. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.